I look high, I look low, I'm looking everywhere I go, looking for a home.
Today I'm at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum, a Minnesota Historical Society site. It's located on the shore of the Big Lake, just off Highway 169 and across the road from the casino. I'm here for the opening of a new exhibit on the jingle dress, its history and traditions. The jingle dress is probably familiar to anyone who has gone to a powwow. The dresses have rows of metal cones that jingle when the women dance. Each dress is unique. Many are brightly colored, while others are more subdued, reflecting the individual tastes. As part of the opening celebration, there are dozens of dancers here in their colorful regalia. They're going to be performing several dances today, and there are women of all ages. In some cases, three and four generations are here dancing together. Now, the jingle dress is believed to have had its origins right here in Mille Lacs. It's a healing dance, having originated in a dream. When first performed, it helped a young girl recover from a serious illness. In addition to dancing, there was a talk by the exhibit curator.
So our next speaker, she's a professor of American Studies, American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota. She's a well-known author in American Indian history. She's been doing a great deal of research and a great deal of hard work putting this event together for you, putting this this exhibit here together for you. So she's a professor at the University of Minnesota, and she's a citizen of the Red Lake Nation. How about a big round of applause for Dr. Brenda Child?
After the program, I talked with Dr. Childs.
Well, we first decided to organize this exhibit because it is, I believe, the 100th anniversary of the jingle dress dance tradition. The stories from Mille Lacs and from other Ojibwe communities talk about a little girl who became very ill, appeared to be near death, and then kind of had this dramatic recovery, and she became actually the first jingle dress dancer. And so from her, this new tradition was born. What I'm a historian, and I teach history, American Indian history, at the University of Minnesota. And a few years ago, I was writing a book, and I wanted to understand more about the history of the Ojibwe jingle dress. And so I went into first photograph archives to see what I could find about its early history. And the thing that surprised me, that kind of led me on the path I went down, was that I really couldn't find an image in the United States or Canada of what you would call a jingle dress before circa 1920, which meant that the tradition is about 100 years old. But why did it evolve at that particular time? So I did more research, and I've always been interested in the problem of the big flu epidemic of 1918-19. That influenza was interesting because it had a terrible effect on young people. Usually influenzas don't. They don't usually kill off young people in the prime of their lives. But this one was incredibly deadly to young people. And so I started it. I was sitting at a powwow one time at Red Lake, and someone was telling that story, and I thought, I wonder if that little girl could have had influenza, because the story is influenza-like, right? Yeah. You know how it is. Even when we have the regular old flu, we think, we're down, we can't do anything. And then after a while, you sit up and want something to eat and drink. And that's sort of the way the story evolves. So in putting together the exhibit, we tried to look at what older dresses were available to us. And so the collections of the Minnesota Historical Society had dresses from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and even more recent dresses. We tried to be representative in the exhibit of the various Ojibwe communities in Minnesota. So the maroon dress that I really like a lot in the exhibit was purchased from a store, and it has a zinc zipper up the side, and that came from our archives at Red Lake. And so someone in the 1930s was shopping in a department store and said, that would make a good jingle dress. So it's surprising what the different materials that people use to make jingle dresses. One of them in the front that was not really formally part of the exhibit, but is in the community part of the exhibit, was one of our wonderful spiritual leaders here in central Minnesota, Lee Staples Obazon. His mother's dress is in the exhibit, and it was purchase in a store as well, but the jingles themselves are made out of baking soda cans, which was interesting to me to see because we tend to think these older jingles were made of Copenhagen snuff can lids. But what we actually see is that they were made of Prince Albert red tobacco cans, baking soda cans, whatever people had available to them. We also have one Dakota skirt in the exhibit, and the Historical Society was reluctant to let us use that because it's in very fragile condition, and so we didn't display the belt or the jacket that went with it. But we know that the Ojibwe jingle dress dance tradition very soon became a Dakota tradition as well, and it reached our closest Dakota neighbors. And so this is an early example of a dress that came into the Historical Society's collection probably from the Sisseton Wahpeton Reservation in North Dakota. It came into the collection from the Minnesota side of the border there. But yeah, we think it's a fantastic exhibit that tells through the decades the story of this interesting tradition. It's an Ojibwe as well as in English. There are kind of posters that are directed more toward kids in the exhibit, especially kids who are learning Ojibwe language, like the kids at Mille Lacs are. And also, we want to talk about why is the jingle dress dance important to women today, and also what are its roots.
One part of the story the exhibit tells is that of the jingle dress actually being part of a radical women's movement.
Well, I say that the jingle dress it was actually part of a radical movement in that at the time the jingle dress dance tradition moved into our Ojibwe communities, it was a time when the federal government tried to outlaw dancing on reservations, even powwows. And so many of us kind of joke about the fact, I know we do at Red Lake, the fact that we always said we were celebrating the 4th of July and we wanted to have a big powwow, but actually we were practicing our traditions under the conditions that the federal government allowed us to do that at the time. And so what I find inspiring about the jingle dress dance is that not only did women develop this new healing tradition to cope with what was probably the aftermath of terrible tragedy in their communities. But they did it at a time when the federal government said, you folks can't do this kind of thing anymore. It's savage. You need to get on the road to civilization. You need to change your ways of life. And at that same moment, women in the Great Lakes said, no, that was irrelevant to them. They needed to work in their communities to help people in the aftermath of this major epidemic of influenza. I think it's continued to have a kind of radical element to it because it was really important in the Idle No More movement in Canada, which was about land and water and resources. And then we see that it was a really, important moment in the Standing Rock protests that jingle dress dancers came together to protest against the pipelines that were moving into that region in South Dakota. So the interesting thing to me about the jingle dress dance is that when I was a little girl, my grandmother at Red Lake was a jingle dress dancer. Now, at that time, it was primarily older women who practiced this tradition. But something happened in the 1980s that the jingle dress moved beyond the Great Lakes and the Dakota communities and became this very big pan-Indian thing. And I think it just shows the relevance of the jingle dress to women today.
The day ended with a free feast of buffalo burgers and wild rice brats outside along the lake with some more singing and dancing still to come. The jingle dress exhibit will be at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum until October of 2020. For Northern Community Radio, I'm Grant Frazier, and this is Close to Home.